is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, we're seeing some very big stories playing out here. One, of course, is this everlasting pandemic that never seems to be going away, and people are getting very frustrated. Seeing a lot of interesting stories there. I mean, even many stories about things like suicide and the impact it's having on many, many Americans here. So it's pretty serious. Now, of course, you see Joe Biden come out and say everybody wear a mask. I'm not sure that's going to help the fear factor, but the question is, will it help our health and well-being? I mean, is it an impact? And it's a question I ask all the time, and I'm sure you do out there as well. What is the impact? Because anytime you're in the public space, you see people wearing the mask and all of that. We will talk today about that story and a whole lot more vital information in regards to this pandemic with Dr. Elizabeth Vliet, and Dr. Marty Fox will join us on that big story. I suspect it will be an eye-opener with some of the information we have. A lot of other big news. And don't forget, we have that second hour, which is always going to be significant here with Michael Johns. Some big stories we'll tell you about later on there. I want to start here at the top of the program and talk about big news. Israel and the United Arab Emirates strike a major, major deal. We haven't seen one like this in a very long time. And it gets very, very interesting. President Trump tweeted out on August 13th and said, huge, of course, you say it like the president does, huge breakthrough today, historic peace agreement between our two great friends, Israel and the United Arab Emirates. So Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, says that is it a big foreign policy win for President Trump? Of course, Joe Biden had a few things to say about that. We will touch on here, but let me go to Dell Wilbur here and tell you about Dell is a former CIA and Department of Defense Intelligence and Counterterrorism officer. And I'm going to give you a footnote, too, which is really exciting news about Dell. He has a new book, In the Shadow of the Swords, the Baghdad Police Academy, coming out October 31. It is for pre-sale, and it is on Amazon now, and this is a big deal from Casemate Publishing. We're excited for Dell to have that new book out there, so we'll talk more about that later. But Dell, how big of a breakthrough is this Israel and United Arab Emirates deal? How big?
It's a big deal. It really is. As you know, I spent a couple of years in the Emirates. I spent all of 2018 in there, and then I was there a few years before that. And this is something that the good thing about it is that it's become public now, but there's been a lot of cooperation behind the scenes between the Emirates and Israel and certainly between the Emirates and the United States. And so I think it was only a matter of time before this actually, you know, happened. But this is huge. It has the potential of leading to other things, other countries basically jumping on the bandwagon. I think that Saudi Arabia is probably going to do the same thing here in the very near future, probably along with some of the other sheikhdoms over there, the Bahrain. And it's a huge deal.
You know, we didn't see it really play out in the media real well. I mean, it's not, as they say, Dell, above the fold or the first lead-in story. And I guess because it is a significant foreign policy victory for the Trump administration, the media was not really excited to promote this one, were they?
No, they weren't. It doesn't fit their agenda, you know, that that Trump is not capable of pulling off such a coup, you know, in foreign relations. You know, one thing that people need to also understand is that this has a big effect on the Muslim Brotherhood, which is, you know, in essence, a terrorist front organization. The Muslim Brotherhood and the Council for American Islamic Relations are both, you know, outlawed in the Emirates. They view them both as terrorist sympathizers and terrorist organizations.
But yet we don't do that here with CARE, do we?
No, absolutely not. You know, CARE is invited to to speak at and joined in the campaigns of some of our congressional candidates.
I mean, what should that tell everybody? I mean, just listen to what we're talking about here. And, you know, there are organizations here in our country that are allowed to roam freely and do harm. And it's what we talk about all the time with the terrorist operation here. I want to bring on Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst, political commentator, host of the Friedman Report here at America Out Loud. And let me remind everybody that Ilana spent, oh, golly, well north of 20 some odd years in Israel, actually raised her family. I think you're boys, Ilana, I believe, and you were trained in Israel as well. So you have a very wide background there of this area. And as an intelligence analyst, I want to ask you something. Now, you've been following this story. As Dale just said, there is, in fact, the president even said, there are probably other countries now that are going to fall into play with this. Here's what gets interesting to me that I think should not be lost. And I want to ask you the question. If I said to you, Ilana, that Iran was also responsible for bringing peace to the Middle East, what would you say? Exactly.
Well, I think that what I would say is that if Iran had anything to do with this development, which is, as Del said, which is huge. Mm-hmm. If they had anything to do with it, it would have been a default. They had no hand in this, except to pose a threat to virtually every country in the region, and therefore the UAE's best interest to make peace with Israel, but for not just because of Iran, for a lot of other very good reasons. And as Del said, this is not something that is brand new. What is brand new is that they have done it officially and it's public. But these efforts to work together on various issues, to do business together, have been going on for as long as I can remember.
So then the question becomes this: so why the driving force now? Why the peace deal now? Why? What's the timing of this right now? Why? What?
Iran is now in a position where it is less of a threat, even though it's making huge noises about attacking everybody. It's less of a threat because they have so many internal problems. Mm-hmm. And it gives the UAE an opportunity to reach out and basically thumb their nose at Iran and say, we're doing this anyway, mm-hmm. because it's in our best interest. And it is. Israel has an enormous amount to give to these Arab countries.
Yeah.
And the fact that we are starting to mm-hmm. see, and we hope very soon, we're going to see other Arab countries becoming into a relationship.
Well, that's what they're saying.
And public relationship.
Yeah. Here's what I want to touch on. If Iran is legitimately less of a threat, as you suggest, and I hear what you're saying, and a lot of that, I would think, would also be a foreign policy victory, potentially, one would argue, from the Trump administration, because they have really decapitated the aggressiveness of Iran in a lot of ways, and Iran's not happy, and with the internal struggles there. I still question, because over the many years, many experts I'm hearing would suggest that Iran has actually helped. When I made the statement, they were helped responsible for the peace. What I am suggesting is that because they are such a threat to all the players in the Middle East, they have been the uniting force to unify all of the players in the Middle East to really come together because they see Iran as such an incredible threat. So that's on one hand. I'd like to ask you if you agree with that statement, Ilana, but then on the other hand, I'm still missing something. Than I think, because if they are indeed, as you say, legitimately on the backside, less of a threat, there's still something about it that drove. And I don't think it's just accidental that it's happening now. There has to be a reason.
And there are several reasons, actually. And one of them is Donald Trump. And he's been very, unlike presidents in the past, he has been very active. And he had a two-pronged approach, which I think was very interesting. He had one approach, which was very public, that he was working for a peace deal between Israel and the Palestinians. But the deal that he came out with, I think, was a ruse, because he created, or his team created, a template, a map that was totally unacceptable. If I had been the Palestinians, I would not have accepted it either, not for any political reasons, but because it divided up the Palestinian state into little bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. And that nobody can operate a state, even if you are a good manager, which they are not. Nobody could operate a state under those conditions. Okay. The other thing is that he was working behind the scenes to try to create a real peace, a doable peace between Israel and the Arab nations. Yeah. And the UAE was a very good place to start. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's really behind it. Mm-hmm. Iran remains a threat, yeah, but because the Iranians are, the government is really crazy. My sources tell me that Iran has already acquired a few nuclear weapons, mm-hmm, and that these are something not that they created in their own
Well, that's another unifying force for the Middle East countries, right there. What you say, you know.
Exactly.
So, bottom line, Ilana, do you feel in your heart and your soul, you're optimistic? I haven't heard optimism coming from you in some time, in years, from this area. Do you feel a little more optimistic today?
I think this is a good sign. It's very hard to know. If you're used to living in the Middle East, it's very difficult to be completely optimistic, because we know that in the Middle East, anything can happen at any time.
Right. That's right.
But I think this is a very good sign.
Right. The point that Ilana brings up, it is so vitally important. You know, with the finesse in the character of the foreign policy of President Trump, which I'm telling you, many have said on the side, well, he should get a Nobel Peace Prize. Well, obviously, amongst other things. But we all know how this plays out. But this is the proof in the pudding that we talk about all the time right here. This is a significant deal, which I think you could argue would probably not have happened without a President Donald Trump in that office. And, you know, when you look at the body chemistry coming out of the White House, and you've seen that over the last couple of days of all the officials there, you get the sense of the trust, and you can't do this without leadership at the very top, but you get that feeling of trust they have with DJT. And this is a significant foreign policy achievement. It should not be lost. But that did not stop Joe Biden from coming out and saying, well, you know, hey, man, this peace deal was made possible by the efforts of multiple administrations. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Or like Obama Biden, for instance, right? I mean, he says the coming together of Israel and Arab states builds on the efforts of multiple administrations. You think that's a little bit of a clue, maybe, people, you know, to foster a broader Arab-Israeli opening. You know, when it comes to foreign policy again, this has been a fairly significant major achievement of this administration that has gone completely broadcasted in the way that it should in the media, which we all understand and know why there. You take that all in, that you understand the gravity of this, please, and what we're talking about. Let me move it along now here and talk to you about this other interesting international story that I think is quite a chuckle, actually. The United States seizing Iranian fuel from four tankers bound for Venezuela. So these are four tankers, roughly over about 1.25 million barrels of fuel we're talking about here, people, okay? And so they confiscated the vessels initially to get the fuel out. I mean, they're not keeping the vessels or what have you, but it really was the goods, the products of the vessels they wanted. And now this thing is kind of tied up into courts, because this came from the U.S. District Court on July 2nd. There was a complaint seeking the forfeiture of all petroleum products aboard these vessels. And the State Department said that if the forfeiture is successful in U.S. courts, listen to this, the proceeds could support the U.S. Victims of State-Sponsored Terrorism Fund instead of those engaging in terrorism, which I think is quite something here. Let me bring on here Jim McKay to join the conversation, please. Jim is a political analyst, a 30-year background in global technology and telecommunications and pharmaceuticals here. Jim, this story in Venezuela, and, you know, I know, you know, we got so much talking here about socialism in our country, but it is quite ironic, I guess might be the right word I would use, that they seize these four vessels between Venezuela and Iran. What do you take on this?
I think when I first heard this, what is going on? Venezuela has the world's largest petroleum reserves. And here's Iran shipping illegally, by all standards, fuel, and everybody first thought it was oil, to Venezuela. It's actually 55 million gallons of gasoline. Shipping that much by these tankers is one spark blows these ships up. That's ridiculous to begin with. But this is socialism at work. This is tyranny at work between the tyrannical state of Iran and the socialist state of Venezuela. They can't get enough gasoline for their cars. And what is Venezuela going to pay Iran with? They have no money. The state is broke. Their inflation is like 1,000% a year. But when we look at this from a standpoint of international trade, politically, everything, it's so wrong that I'm just really glad to see the U.S. District Court step in, give them a warrant to seize the vessels. The vessels are being, last we heard, were in the Galveston ship channel by Houston, unloading the fuel, and then the vessels would be released. They fly under a Liberian flag. They're not an Iranian-owned ship.
Right, right. There were other players involved in this thing as well. You know, let's remind people that Venezuela, this is the product of what socialism does for you, just to remind everybody here a moment. So Venezuela controls one of the world's largest crude reserves. I mean, people, they have an amazing amount of crude reserves there in Venezuela. I mean, they are a major producer of energy like this, and yet they are busted broke and don't have two nickels to put together. I mean, that is the product and the result of what you call socialism, which is what the far left is trying to bring to America here. I mean, would I need to spell out anything more for anybody to understand what this would do to America? See, it's important we look at these stories and we really understand the gravity of what's going on globally, because socialism, aka communism, has never worked, ever worked on planet Earth. Now, maybe it's in some other far distant part of the galaxy. I do not know, but it is not working here, I assure you. So let that be a warning call for everybody for election 2020. So as we move a little closer to home now, let's talk about this other news that Attorney General Bill Barr had said, well, there'll be some news on Friday. He had mentioned this midweek there, and there was a little bit of news. Said it won't be earth crazy shattering, but I think what's interesting is what I get out of this is they've laid some breadcrumbs down now, is what I'm gathering here. Let me tell you what the story is. You might have heard the former FBI attorney, Kevin Kleinsmith. Well, he's pleading guilty now in the Connecticut U.S. Attorney John Durham's investigation into the origin of the Russia probe. Let me give you a quote here from Lindsey Graham. Says, something tells me that Mr. Kleinsmith knows where the bodies are buried. And if I were in the FBI working on Crossfire Hurricane, which was the Russia investigation, by the way, I would be very worried right about now, he says here. Let me bring back on Dell here and ask you right out, Dell, about this story here with Kevin Kleinsmith, but more so the John Durham report. Dell, this is, it's a little, my guess is, I mean, it was interesting to me, or it wasn't lost on me, about how this story was leaked by Barr midweek to prepare everybody. Then it was released on Friday. Not really a big piece of news, but yet kind of is, because I think he's possibly, or is he, I would ask you, laying the breadcrumbs down for what is to come now.
Well, I think he's laying the breadcrumbs down. I think there's going to be more to come. And, you know, my feeling is this this prosecution of Kleinsmith is basically going to, it's a deal that's been cut. Kleinsmith obviously has information about other players that were either directly involved or knowledgeable of his activities. And if they're knowledgeable of what he did, yet went along with it, then they're just as guilty as him.
Right. Well, that's what they do. Everybody's got to understand, Dale. They use a person like this, a lower level person, to achieve bigger fish, right?
Well, absolutely. And I can assure you, being, you know, with the FBI, Kleinsmith does not want to do any jail time. And, you know, he's going to you know, work out whatever deal is best, is in his own best interest.
That's how it works. Yeah. I mean, he's a young guy. He's a young looking guy, buddy. I mean, so he's got a whole life ahead of him, you know? And like you say, he doesn't want to end up in a prison somewhere, but this is how it works in this system. So the question becomes now is, will they be able to use this, and how big is the John Durham story? I mean, where does that really go? How confident are you, Dell, with the whole John Durham thing?
You know, I have to put my faith in Attorney General Barr and in what's been, you know, going on. I understand when you're dealing with very complex investigations, which this in fact it is, and Durham's not releasing a report. He's conducting an investigation. This is a criminal investigation, and you got to make sure you have all your ducks in line when you get ready to apply for warrants, or in this case, present it to the Department of Justice for prosecution. So, you know, he's taking his time. He's being methodical, and considering the huge nature of this investigation and all of the very senior Obama administration officials who likely were involved, he has to take it slow. I just hope he gets it done before the election, because if Biden is elected in November, everything will come to a screeching halt.
Everything stops. Yeah. But yet, if he does come out with this whole thing and there are indictments before then, you know what's going to happen on the left. I mean, they're going to scream, I mean, bloody murder, no? About the election interference.
Oh, yeah, they will. But, you know, I really could care less. You know, I mean, the truth has to prevail. And and in this case, I think this well, we all know, you know, we all know what's been going on. This coup d'etat attempt has been far-reaching and involved a lot of people.
You can see the implications and the ramifications of this election victory. You can see why it's, you get the gravity now, you know, of what we're talking about here. It's not just an election. It's not just another administration. There's a lot tied to this now with this whole, you can't put this in the right context. And no matter what, there's going to be a lot of loud voices coming, I can tell you, because of what was done to our republic. And so we're at an interesting pivotal moment of the nation. There is no doubt about it, my friends. Speaking of which, the other big news story is this, wow, absentee versus universal mail-in voting. But it's even bigger than that now. The United States Post Service warns that many of the mail ballots may not be counted because they have no, you know, they're not executing. First of all, they're bankrupt, and the United States Postal Service doesn't have any money. They've never had any money. This is an organization that is really not a government. It's a private organization that is like a welfare state. They have their hand out incessantly and have had it since I was a young boy, looking for money. They're the most inept, inoperative group of people I've ever seen. Jim McKay, let's talk about that Postal Service. I mean, I don't think people understand how dysfunctional they are as a group. But now they're saying, hey, we can't guarantee any of this stuff now. And now you've got a real complicated situation because everybody's screaming loud. The story is all over the place. There are lawsuits, almost a couple of hundred lawsuits nationwide, by the way. 43 states are saying that, you know, there are lawsuits and problems in here, Jim, where they're not going to be able to execute this. What do you think?
Well, the biggest problem is not the raw capacity of the post office to move mail. They move about 180 million pieces of mail a day, billions and billions of pieces of mail a year. The biggest problem is what the states, every state handles their mail-out absentee ballots differently. Utah, the governor of Utah has lately been in the news saying he's going to mail out ballots to everybody from the old voter rolls from 6 years ago to make sure everybody has a ballot. That's 1,750,000 ballots. The catch on it is none of them go out until October 13th, and the last ones don't go out until October 27th, which gives a very limited time for people to respond and get them into the mail and back to the post office. And it's not the post office. The post office doesn't count anything. Mm-hmm. They just ship it from one place to another. If it doesn't get to the post office until 6 o'clock on November 2nd, it's not going to get to the regional or district or whatever precincts, the way they, wherever they're counting the ballots by the next day. It's even worse because in almost every state, they can open the ballots, they can stack them up, but they can't process them through the readers that tally the ballots until after the polls close on November 3rd. And even more ludicrous is the state of Maryland does not count any absentee ballot or mail-in ballot until after 8 o'clock on November 4th. So how do you get an outcome by the time we go to sleep?
If you combine everything you just say there, Jim, along with the fact that they're trying to, because of the pandemic, so quote, you know, is what they're using as the excuse. They're trying to push and get everybody a ballot, like I said, drop them from planes if they have to, so that dead people can vote and people can vote multiple times and all of this. That is the controversy, isn't it?
It is, but they keep pushing that, oh, we need more money for the post office. That's the Democrats saying it. And it's $3.5 billion, which will only cover their budget shortfall, exactly, their deficit, exactly, for the last quarter.
We've been talking about the post office problems since we were all in diapers, for real. I mean, and, you know, the dysfunctionality of the United States Postal Service should be clear or not lost on anybody. Again, this is not a government agency, which a lot of people think it's owned by the government. It is a private enterprise, really. But we fund them. The taxpayer money is really where they get all their dollars from, because they're always crying uncle or to Uncle Sam. And Uncle Sam turns around and cries uncle to the patrons, you and I out there. And that really is the cycle here that happens. But they've never fixed the problem with the Postal Service. Now we're coming to a full controversy here, and I think we're going to have a major problem with this in election 2020, my fellow Americans. And I think based on all of this information, there is the potential for not knowing who the victor is going to be. All of this adds a lot more stress and fear into the election. All of this was easily fixable, by the way, too. If we would really just guard the sanctity and the value of our votes, if we would understand that asking an American for an ID to make sure you are indeed who you are, that you are going to vote, basic principles would have fixed our system long ago, as far as this conversation of, you know, mail-in versus absentee. And I think everybody should be entitled to get an absentee vote and vote by mail if you should choose to do so. There's nothing wrong with that. But the media confuses all of that to confuse you out there by saying, well, the right is trying to stop the vote, which is not at all the case. What they're trying to stop is the fraud and this deceit that is in the voting system from all kinds of problems and all kinds of situations. So this problem is not going away, I assure you. It will become more and more visible. And just ahead here in election 2020, you heard it here. It's a big warning sign coming up here now, fast. Thank you here to Del Wilbur, Ilana Friedman, and Jim McKay. All right, so I'm pretty hot about this next segment we're going to talk about here on the mask mandate, the vaccines that are coming, treating COVID, what does that really mean? And then we'll layer all of that with political posturing. I'll tell you what, it's going to be pretty heated. Go grab your second cup of coffee, and we'll see you on the other side of the pause. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Hey, we join you back on Viewpoint this Sunday, and I want to remind you to stay for our second hour. We'll be on there with Michael Johns. I'll tell you more about that a little bit later here. We've got a great second hour ready for you, and to inform we the people as to what exactly is going on out there. Now, listen, I'm excited about this next segment. Let me welcome on here to the program, Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet is here. She's an independent physician specializing in preventive and climacteric medicine. She is on the front lines of really trying to save lives in so many ways as a physician. Joining us as well is Dr. Marty Fox. Dr. Marty Fox is a political analyst. He's a public speaker, a physician, former talk show host himself, and excited for the first time, by the way, to have both Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet and Dr. Marty Fox on together here. So let's talk about first, I want to start with the mask. I want to start with the simple, simple thing, which I think is a very complex conversation, but that is this wearing of the mask. So the vice president candidate, former vice president, and now Democrat, socialist Democrat nominee for the office, and I quote, says this: every single American should be wearing a mask when they're outside for the next 3 months at a minimum. Every governor should mandate mandatory mask wearing. The estimates by the experts are it will save over 40,000 lives. Now, listen. When he said it will save over 40,000 lives, and let me be straight with you all now. If I really believe in my heart, if someone can convince me that it's going to save all those lives, I'll certainly get on the bandwagon and help you promote the fact that we'll all go into a temporary mode of wearing all these masks. And if that's really what it was going to do, but I'm not convinced of that. And it gets really interesting. Let me ask you first, Dr. Vliet, as far as this mask thing, here's the thing. It's become a very political, polarizing conversation. When you're out in the public space, there are people that look at you funny when you don't have a mask on, and there are some violent moments where there's a clash between people that don't even know each other because one has a mask on, one doesn't have a mask, and there's a conflict because people want to now govern your life and tell you what you should or should not be doing. But here's what I want to ask you. As people wear these masks, I'm seeing they're half on, their noses, their mouth are exposed. I mean, I'm not sure what it's accomplishing. Do masks work? Medically speaking now, I'm talking about, are they effective?
Malcolm, masks are not effective the way people are using them now because the masks that they're wearing don't filter out the tenth of a micron tiny viral particles that everyone is all panicked about. The masks actually are contributing to people recirculating their upper respiratory bacteria, viruses, fungus, all of the pollens and things that are in the dust in the air. So you're recirculating that. You're not getting fresh air. You're dropping your oxygen. You're increasing your breathing in of carbon dioxide. That's what leads to lightheadedness and headaches. Wearing a mask all the time, especially outdoors, the whole purpose is to prevent viruses, your coughing and sneezing, affecting others, and prevent viruses that you might inhale. Well, the particles can still get through most of the masks that people are wearing. And in the first place, in the second place, if you're not coughing and sneezing, if you're not sick, there's no reason to be wearing a mask. And if you're outdoors by yourself, there's even less reason to be wearing a mask because there's no one around for you to infect. The stupidity of the way people are wearing masks is mind-boggling. And it's dangerous because we're seeing, I'm seeing in Arizona, with temperatures at 108 degrees, people outdoors by themselves, exercising, wearing a mask. They're going to keel over dead of heat stroke or loss of oxygen.
And what they're doing is they're wearing scarves, they're wearing handkerchiefs, they're wearing garments that are thin, like nylon sort of material. And some of them are even wearing fancy, like stone studded mask. It's become sort of a fashion statement, which I don't really understand what's going on with all this.
Well, the bigger picture is that it's mind control and population control, and the getting people conditioned to being controlled literally in the freedom to breathe. It is staggering what has been accomplished in 4 months. And let me say to this, when Joe Biden incorrectly says that you could save 40,000 lives by wearing masks, let me rebut that with Dr. Harvey Risch, who is a reputable physician epidemiologist at Yale, who said we could have saved 100,000 lives if we had had access to early use of hydroxychloroquine that stops the virus cold in its tracks in the first few days of symptoms. So let's get real and talk about what the serious issue is here.
As far as how political this is, Dr. Marty Fox, now here's the thing. It's become even more than just, I mean, there's conflict in the streets, but there's also conflict, for instance, even with media and social media operations where they are, how do I even say, well, more than censoring, they're actually suspending people and doing things of nature, throwing them off of their platforms, to be very plain English with you. And they're tossing it because they don't like the fact that they're suggesting that they you have an answer that they doesn't meet their qualifications, or you talk against the mask thing, or whatever it is that they don't agree with. And so this has gotten really soupy at this point out there. What's your feelings about the mask thing? I mean, can it work? Can it be effective?
Listen, I agree with Dr. Vliet about the mask. They're not effective. The virus is 0.1 micron. The masks are ineffective below 0.3 microns. And the current CDC guidelines are to use a mask indoors if you're around people. There is no constitutional authority to mandate these masks. There's no scientific basis, especially on the outside. I mean, if you're outside riding your bike somewhere, there's absolutely no reason for it. As far as social media, this COVID-19 is a tremendous device for the left persuading people to suspend their civil liberties. And they are exploiting it to the hilt. It is, don't let a crisis go to waste on steroids. And it is so successful, and people are so scared that they're doing everything imaginable to prolong this pandemic, which I spell with a capital D-E-M. So part of this mask mandate is a big part of this, and a big part of their campaign is to persuade people that President Trump has not dealt effectively with this virus. And your problems that you're having right now are because of President Trump. Blame President Trump. And the fix is to elect us, of course. So, Biden, Obama, H1N1 flu, where, there were 60 million cases. They didn't mandate any masks there. Why was there no mask mandate there? Why are they letting people out of prison? Why don't they just give them masks? They're letting felons out of prison who are now committing crimes against law-abiding citizens because of COVID.
That's a very interesting point.
Why don't they just give you some more masks?
That's a really good point, Marty. That's thank you for saying that. You know, the other thing you just said, and you caught me before I even asked you about the constitutionality. Clearly, this is not constitutional to force people to do these kinds of things. But now, on that point, I want to ask you a difficult question, Marty. This is not an easy one. But first, let me tell you what Joe Biden says. And listen to the words here, please, everybody. He says, it's not about your rights, It's about your responsibilities. Now, this is what Joe Biden says. He says, you know, he calls about the issue as a matter of great urgency. Now, President Trump, though, at the same time, Marty, he came out and said it's patriotic, he said, which blew a lot of our minds out there, and said that he recommended you wear a mask. So you've got both sides telling you to wear a mask. What do you say to that?
Listen, on Biden, this is exactly what we expect from this totalitarian mindset, Democrat Marxist party. You have no rights. What's new? They are an anti-constitutional party. He's okay with the rioters and looters, and they're not wearing masks, but they want to impose a mandate on law-abiding citizens. They're okay with criminals and criminal illegals and sanctuary cities. They're fine with that, but they want to impose a mask mandate on law-abiding citizens. As far as President Trump goes, in his complete statement, he said he left it up to the governors, that he would leave this up to the governors, which is federalism, which is constitutional. There's no authority for a federal mandate. And every state has their own mask-wearing guidelines. You know, the blue states with their tyrannical governors have some deranged guidelines similar to what Joe Biden is, recommending. So, you know, I think President Trump is treading lightly on this, but his bottom line is that he's leaving it to the governors,
right.
which is constitutional.
Right. I'll accept what you say there. It is accurate what you're saying, but I would also add to that potentially, Marty, that there is obviously a great deal of pressure in trying to deal with this pandemic. It is so politicized. As you say, it is one of the biggest devices being utilized for election 2020. That one and the other one we'll talk about later on in the second hour, which is the civil unrest in America's cities as the other device that is being used here. I want to talk about treating COVID now, since we've got Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet on with us here. This is interesting. Back early in the year, Dr. Vliet, back around, I'm going to suggest March or April, there was a lot of talk about, of course, the remdesivir, but the hydroxychloroquine, the statements that were made from the president, and it started to get out there, and the media immediately started to downplay it as a success, as we know. There was a statement made publicly on some of the television channels from a Dr. Stephen Smith, where he had made a very blanketed statement. I think because of hydroxychloroquine, by the way, and the CPAC and all of this combination of drugs that is highly, highly effective for treating this. He said this, and I quote, "I think this is the beginning of the end of the pandemic." Now, that quote got me. It grabbed me. And I still remember it, and I wrote it down at the time, and I still have it here that was said. And there were many doctors echoing that claim that I was hearing back there as this thing got over. Well, now the Federal Food and Drug Administration, the wonderful, fabulous FDA, now they have rejected a July 6th request by Detroit-based Henry Ford Health System, the Henry Ford Hospital, for approval to use hydroxychloroquine in treating some of the COVID-19 patients. This has been very edgy, very controversial. There was a letter on this and all. You've been on the front lines of this. What is happening with this? And I mean, it seems to me like we have an answer potentially for the pandemic, but nobody wants to talk about the answer.
Well, it isn't correct that nobody wants to talk about it. It's that there is active suppression, orchestrated suppression of the news, the studies that do show exactly what Dr. Stephen Smith said. And I heard his interview. You're absolutely correct. He did say that. He was right. Other countries showed that. And we have it shown in three countries that I know of, a natural experiment where essentially, for one reason or another, they stopped using hydroxychloroquine. The death rates and hospitalization rates went skyrocketing, and then reinstituted a policy of early intervention in the first 5 days of symptoms. And within 30 to 40 30 to 35 days, the death rate had plummeted again, hospitalization rates had plummeted. Your listeners need to know, hydroxychloroquine was shown 18 years ago in NIH studies with Dr. Fauci at the helm. He has to know about these studies. They were published in the official journal of NIH Virology in 2005. The studies were done 2002 and 2003. It showed hydroxychloroquine stops the virus from entering the cell by blocking the ACE2 receptor, and it stops the virus from multiplying by facilitating zinc entry into the cell to block the virus from multiplying. Period, end of story. That is a potent early intervention mechanism of action, that hydroxychloroquine with zinc stops the virus from entering and multiplying, which means what Stephen Smith said is correct. If you give it early, in the first 5 days of symptoms, and this has been shown country by country, the physicians that did the research that led by Dr. Peter McCullough at Baylor and the Henry Ford team and other teams, Mount Sinai had a study of over 6,000 patients that showed the same thing. You didn't hear a word about it. You haven't heard a word about the low death rates in China, Turkey, Iran, South Korea, India, Israel, New Zealand, Australia. I mean, all of these countries that have been using hydroxychloroquine from the get-go, at the beginning of the symptoms, show dramatically lower death rates than the United States, with all of our sophisticated hospitals, ICUs, doctors and nurses and ventilators and all of our equipment and all of our millions of testing. We have a death rate that is 10 times what the other countries, many of them third world countries, that just simply doctors make the decision with their patient based on symptoms. They don't have the resources for all the testing. They make the decision, they give the hydroxychloroquine, and literally every patient that I've treated with it early, their symptoms are cleared in the first 3 days, and they are better in a week.
I've asked a series of MDs about this. Actually, what I asked them is, what would they take if they were in that situation and had some of the side effects or the initial effects of a this COVID disease? What would be the first steps they would take? And every MD I've spoken to, and every lead in politician, senators and congressmen and others who are in positions of the know, they know what's going on. They all answer me back with the fact that the first thing they would do would be to take the treatment you just laid out. So if that is all what it is, and we see that, then, and you know, the two things that come to my mind here. Number one is, what is it with these people that they are, I mean, I wonder, when you talk about good and evil, Dr. Vliet, I mean, do they really not know the effectiveness of this, or have they convinced themselves differently, or are they okay, I wonder, with people dying because the stakes on the other side of seasoned power are more critical, and the price to pay for dead Americans is okay? Now, I know maybe that doesn't sound right, and that sounds a little harsh, but too bad, so sad. What is the answer to that?
Well, I think the answer is very obvious. They obviously know the data that they're covering up. The FDA has the studies that show outpatient benefit. They are choosing to suppress it. Mm. That's why I said what I did, that it's not accurate to say they're not talking about it. It goes farther than that. They are actively suppressing it. They are misrepresenting to the American public what is there. Dr. Fauci, I go back to my statement from a while back. I believe he is deliberately misleading the American public. The agenda is to push for vaccines. There are billions at stake in the vaccine industry, among big pharma, among NIH getting money on patents, CDC, FDA, the researchers. They've all got names on patents. Anybody can look it up on the patent registry. The vaccine, this is all, looking at the 35,000 foot view very quickly, this is all about bringing the pieces together, suppressing social media, suppressing the early use of HCQ, making people wear masks, getting people ready for population control and conditioning to accept these intrusions on our civil liberties, keeping things locked down until the election, hoping to influence the election, at which point there'll be mass vaccinations forced on the public. They've made that clear. All you have to do is read what the power elites are saying, and it's not just Democrats. It's on both sides of the aisle. It's the elites for power and control versus the people having control and liberty to live their lives. Yeah. President Trump said it in his inauguration speech. He wanted to give power back to the people, and those who want to keep power and money and control are fighting tooth and nail, and the ends justify the means. To me, that's the bottom line. You see it in every totalitarian country in human history.
It's difficult for some of us to comprehend, Marty, that they would be willing to sacrifice other human lives for what we just put out there, what I started and what Dr. Vliet finished for me, which I hope that everybody listening is clearly paying attention to what is being said. It's important. Here's the thing as well, Marty, is that, you know, that study, by the way, with the Henry Ford study and then the FDA coming back and all of that, back to yours truly that Dr. Vliet was just talking about, Dr. Anthony Fauci, he described it as flawed. He said the whole thing was flawed. That's the easy word they use to discredit all of that. But again, I would ask you the same thing, Marty, that I've asked many others as a student of this this problem and politics and following it all. I mean, if you had the symptoms and you thought you had COVID, or even more, your wife or child had it as well, would you administer this Z-Pak and hydroxychloroquine? Would you do it?
Yeah, listen, no question about it, Malcolm. I've already done it, and I've already used it prophylactically myself. I want to go back to something you said, because I don't think you're being too harsh. I say all the time that for the left, dead Americans are acceptable collateral damage to advance their agenda. And historically, for the left, Stalin, Mao, all of them have that in common. If you're an obstacle, that's fine. They don't mind. That is okay with them. And I don't think it's too harsh. I think those are the facts. I think it's also bigger than just the profit motive. You know, obviously, everything Dr. Vliet mentioned is critical. The vaccines, the more expensive, less effective remdesivir made by Gilead, Fauci's in bed with them, NIH advisors are in bed with them. And he was all smiles about their half-assed study, a flawed study. They trotted out a lot of flawed studies to discredit hydroxychloroquine, but there has never been one study, a real randomized trial on early use. And the bigger picture, even beyond the profit margin, is that HCQ, like Stephen Smith said, would be the end of the pandemic, and they need this pandemic. Hmm. They need it at least until Election Day and maybe beyond, to continue their control over the population, to use it. People are scared. When people are scared, when there's chaos, people are willing to hand over power to the government, which is them. Government is us, Democrats. So, yes, the profit margin, but hydroxychloroquine would lower the risk level in people's minds to something acceptable. They would reduce the panic level, and things would have some sense of normalcy.
Right.
In fact, I'm disappointed that President Trump seems to have abandoned this fight, because that is the answer. That is the answer to opening schools.
Yeah, not hearing anything from President Trump on it. In fact, I did hear him in some previous conferences, Marty, talk about remdesivir, but I have not heard him for a moment bring up hydroxychloroquine in recent weeks here that I've heard anyways or seen any reports on, which tells you that, again, he's in a political conundrum, I would say, probably. I don't really know, but that's my guess, Marty. And it doesn't feel quite right as I'm hearing all this, and I knew this was going to be a powerful, powerful segment here.
It's really important what Dr. Fox just said, the prophylactic use of hydroxychloroquine. Mm-hmm. We're talking about one pill a week as prophylactic dose, 200 milligrams once a week, some doctors are saying every other week. we're talking about a minuscule amount. It lasts 22 days. And if people were taking that on an ongoing basis, we have millions of doses sitting in the national stockpile that could cover so many Americans. Yeah. I do know that there are a lot of efforts to break through this FDA stonewall.
It's sinful, sinful is all I can say, Dr. Vlade.
It is evil. It is unconscionable.
Absolutely. All right. I want to ask you something else here, please, for running out of time here. That is this other one, the CDC director, and this is Redfield, Dr. Robert Redfield, that is. So he says the U.S. could have the worst fall than ever. And these are predictions in the last day or two. Now I'm seeing multiple stories on this, and I'm thinking, oh boy, here's some more fear. So what he's suggesting is that the skyrocketing of COVID combined with the influenza season and all, and that we could have some major, major impact. So he's saying, I'm asking you to do four simple things, he says, Dr. Vlade. Wear a mask, social distance, wash your hands, and be smart about crowds. He said, if we don't do that, this will be the worst fall from a public health perspective we've ever had. And he said, I keep telling people, I'm not asking some of America to do it. We all got to do it. This is one of those interventions that's got to be 95, 96, 97, 98, 99% if it's going to work. What do you say to that, Dr. Vlade?
I say that he is being lying. He is absolutely misleading the American public. We know from studies CDC and themselves initiated in 2002 that hydroxychloroquine and zinc stop the viral entry and multiplication, Malcolm. There are studies to show it works also against the influenza virus, as well as the coronavirus that causes the colds and the COVID-19 illness. And for the director of the CDC to say what he did and ignore his own agency's data on the effectiveness of this medicine for early treatment and prevention is absolutely unconscionable, that he's misleading the public like that. And they know it. Yeah. They know it.
Yeah, wow. And the worst of it is that they know it, Dr. Vlade says. Truly amazing. You know, I knew this was going to be a very important segment of the show, which is why I allotted more time to it, my friends. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to have Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vlade and Dr. Marty Fox, who are two really great voices on these topics with so much information we need to know out there. I'm going to have them back and request them to come on my weekly show, The Voice of a Nation, which plays at 6 p.m. and 10 as an encore on America Out Loud Talk Radio. So look for us there. I'm going to invite them there so we can explore all of this much more. Thank you, friends, again, for being on the mission here of Viewpoints. Now, your job is to get the information out there from sea to shine and see and make people understand what the truth is. It is no good if it is silent. We need to ring the bells loudly and inform people accordingly. Next hour, coming up with Michael Johns on Viewpoint Presents, a whole lot there. What does a Democrat America look like if they did win in 2020? And then the extreme left in China. What is their role in the current crises America is facing? And defining our national predicament. We will do exactly that. Thank you again. As always, it's time to get involved and get loud.